going to read this morning a verse from Canto 3, chapter 22, text number 35. The title of the chapter is The Marriage of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. And they've already got married, so it's too late to miss them. Earlier parts of this chapter are fantastic. This is just the close. Swayambhu Manu, and even from the previous chapter, Swayambhu Manu with his daughter and with Shatrurupa, his queen, went deep into the forest to find Kardama Muni, whose fame was well known, and whole exchange on appreciation of the king for the brahmana, appreciation first is the brahmana for the king for the brahmana, and then the introduction of the topic of the marriage of the daughter, the qualifications of the brahmana to be the qualified husband, appreciation of the girl to be a qualified wife, acceptance, marriage, Swayambhu Manu feeling happy and sad at the same time, those kinds of emotions when the daughter gets married and she's no longer in the father's family, she's in her new husband's family, some affection of exchange. He returns back to his kingdom and he continues his rule in his kingdom for, where's that post-it pad? Okay. For 305 million something something years. So it's 71 times 4,000, 4,000, 4,000,320,000 years. So it's 71 yuga cycles is the duration of the life or the rule of Manu. 71 times the duration of one yuga cycle is 4,320,000. So the math comes out to, he had a long life, 306 million plus years. And the previous verses describe exactly what we spoke about yesterday evening at the Sunday Feast program, or those five verses, the concluding five verses of how to engage in worldly duties. In this case, he's the king, and Brahma, it's his case, it was creating a universe. And in our case, it's whatever it is, our worldly duties, in such a way that, on the one hand, worldly duties do not interfere with our progressive Krishna consciousness, and on the other hand, our progressive Krishna consciousness doesn't eclipse the performance of duties. We heard the principle, so I don't need to just say the principle again. Essentially, it's remembrance of the personality of Godhead through the agency of practices that bring remembrance. That's the sadhana part. Until one comes to the spontaneous platform of remembrance of the personality of Godhead. and joining that remembrance of the personality of Godhead with the activity and dedicating the activity to the service of the personality of Godhead. That's the principle that we heard Krishna speak to Brahma. Now, that's Sri Brahma Samhita in a sutra form, like the teaching. And then this is just a little appreciation of what the Puranas are. Puranas are histories or stories of real life situations where the principle is lived or exemplified, enveloped within some activity. The interest in the activity is Krishna. And in this case, it's how to be Krishna conscious while doing one's worldly duties. So I'll just read the verses, a few of them. It's historical narration of what we heard yesterday, principle-wise. Texts 29 and 30 describes the opulence of his capital. Varhishvati, rich in all kinds of wealth, and it had some historical connection with the personality of Godhead, Lord Varaha. When the Lord Varaha rescued the earth, and he came out of the water, and the earth was placed again in its proper position, as boars will do, he shook his body to get all the water off. And as he shook his body, some hairs from his body fell. And they fell at the place where Swayambhuva Manu chose to make his capital. So it was a holy place. And then it's described when those hairs fell, it created some very special kind of grass. Kusha and Kasha grass, which he then used and sages would use for their process of Dhyan Yoga or meditation, which is the process in Satya Yoga, meditation. So Manu spread a seat of Kushas and Kashas and worshiped the Lord, the personality of Godhead, by whose grace he had obtained the rule of the terrestrial globe. If you remember one of the statements or explanations made by Bhaktisiddhanta, to protect one from doership mentality and being covered by false ego and becoming entangled in worldly affairs instead of making spiritual progress while doing one's duties in this world, is to see whatever comes is a gift from Krishna, is Krishna's, and he's given it to provide some service. Because Krishna doesn't need anything. But he may give something to us so we can do some service. Of course, we can not use it for service, we can use it for some other purpose, like a selfish purpose, a sense gratificatory purpose. But if we see those things, as Swayambhuva Manu did, the grace of the Supreme Lord to provide him, Swayambhuva Manu, with some service. And he had a big service. He was the emperor of the universe. Very big service. So, he had facility. But he wasn't seeing himself, oh, look at this nice facility. I've got a nice big palace. I've got a nice big treasury. And I'm doing great. He wasn't thinking like that. It was facility for service to the personality of Godhead. That's how he was regarding things. Having entered the city of Varhishmati, in which he previously lived, Manu entered his palace, which was filled with an atmosphere that eradicated the three miseries of material existence. Prabhupada explains, the miseries of material existence didn't stop existing, but they weren't affecting him. They weren't affecting him because of his internal Krishna consciousness. we all have circumstances that are challenging and, you know, cause us irritation. We don't need to elaborate. We all have those. So how to rise above those or not have those affect you? How to have your bhakti prevail and not have those threefold miseries prevail in your consciousness? It's by Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada explains it this way. We cannot stop the miseries in the material atmosphere, but Krishna consciousness is the antiseptic method to protect us from being affected by the miseries of material existence. So we can be anywhere. Here, there, another place. Good fortune, ill fortune. Lots of rain. Lots of sunshine. Cold, hot. Whatever the duality throws at us. The message of second chapter of Bhagavad Gita is you tolerate those things. The message we're hearing in the Bhagavatam is you're not affected by those things. You're transcendental to those things. Text 32. Whoops, 33. Emperor Swayambhuva Manu enjoyed life with his wife and subjects and fulfilled his desires. See how closely this connects with what we discussed yesterday. Those last five verses of Sri Brahma Samhita. He fulfilled his desires without being disturbed by unwanted principles contrary to the process of religion. He abided by theistic conduct. Remember that one? Sadachara.
59.
Huh?
59.
59, yeah. And this is of the two, we heard Sorupkata and Vastukata. So understanding the personality of Godhead. He's Swayambhuva Manu. He understands the personality of Godhead. And at the same time, he has this thing going on where it's material enjoyment, looks like. Celestial musicians and their wives sang in chorus about the pure reputation of the emperor every day. Early in the morning, every day, he used to listen to the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a loving heart. And then the last verse before this morning's verse. Thus, Swayambhuva Manu was a saintly king. Although absorbed in material happiness, he was not dragged to the lowest grade of life, for he always enjoyed his material happiness in a Krishna-conscious atmosphere. It's as Prabhupada calls it, a razor's edge. If you're not Krishna conscious and you try to, you know, dovetail things, yukta vairagya kind of thing, you use things in Krishna's service but you're not Krishna's, that's the, you know, the theory, but behind it is not sufficient Krishna consciousness, what happens? You get dragged down. It uses you rather than you use it in Krishna's service. It uses you in Maya's service and consciousness becomes covered. And so our teaching, Rupa Goswami's teaching, which is Lord Chaitanya's teaching, is the artificial renunciation is rejected. Or it's pangu vairagya, false renunciation. Monkey renunciation. Monkeys also live very, you know, they don't have any home, they live under trees, and they don't have clothes, and, you know, they live like monkeys. Renounced. So some people also live like monkeys. and may consider themselves renounced. Anyway, our Vaishnava principle is not that kind of renunciation, but it's Yukta Vairagya kind of renunciation. Just to repeat, it's seeing those things that come your way as some descending kindness, mercy, facility from Krishna to use something in his service. Krishna is so kind. Just like, I love the example of Sudama Brahman, when he's leaving Dwarka. He's thinking, Krishna is so kind. It's a wonderful drama for devotees to do their dramas in temples. Krishna is so kind. He's walking home. He's all knowing. He's omniscient. He knew why I came to Dwarka, but he didn't even ask me, why have you come to see me? Because I'm a Brahmin now, and I would have to tell them the truth. I came to ask you for something material, a nice place. So my wife is in an anxiety that I'm in this austere condition of life. He didn't ask me. And he didn't ask me because he knew if he gave me those things, I'd just become proud, thinking, oh, I'm special. Krishna gave me this. Krishna gave me that. And try to be the enjoyer of this and that. No. Krishna knows my consciousness, so he didn't even ask. Krishna is so kind. He didn't want me to become entangled in worldly affairs. I'm still impoverished, destitute. Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so kind. And all the way home, he's just thinking, Krishna is so kind. And then when he got home, he didn't see his home. He saw a palace. He wondered, what happened to my home? I was here just 2 days ago, and now it's, what happened to my home? And from the palace comes some woman who didn't even recognize, because she was decorated so gorgeously, and fine clothes, and ornaments, and no anxiety on her face. She was just very happy. It was that person. And when she spoke, he understood, oh, it's my wife. What happened? He said, well, I thought you arranged this. You went to Krishna and asked for relief from this impoverished condition, and he made this arrangement. Krishna is so kind. And then he thought, Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so kind. In all circumstances, Krishna is so kind. Because Sudama was attached to Krishna, in love with Krishna. He could not have and be happy, and he could have and be happy. And that's the teaching that Prabhupada gave us. I mean, it's along so many, in classes and in other ways, Prabhupada taught this principle. So it's the principle of genuine detachment, yukta vairagya, utilizing things in Krishna's service by seeing them as opportunity, some facility given by Krishna to serve him, whatever it is. Or if there's some loss, whatever it is, Krishna is very kind. My tendency is to be attached. So Krishna is very kind. He knows my tendency to be attached. So he's taking away that object of my attachment so I can become attached to him instead of the object of my enjoyment. Krishna is very kind. It's a very simple point, but since life is filled with, you know, diversity or duality, it's very important to observe the different manifestations of duality from a transcendental perspective. Have and have not. Good fortune, ill fortune, apparently. That's in the eye of the beholder. One who's attached to Krishna sees Krishna is very kind. So that's the previous verses. So his material happiness was there, But it wasn't an impediment. It didn't disturb. It didn't cover his Krishna consciousness. Why? Because he was absorbed in those activities that bring the mind to Krishna. Exactly what we heard yesterday. So here's today's verse, text 35, and its purport. Very nice. Right on point. Consequently, although his duration of life gradually came to an end, his long life, consisting of a Manvantara era, was not spent in vain, since he ever engaged in hearing, contemplating, writing down, and chanting the pastimes of the Lord. Exactly at the point. Sadhana was just a simple phrase used by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, or it's actually in the verse. And here it's just detailing. So listen to Prabhupada's brilliant purport, two paragraphs. As freshly prepared food is very tasteful, but if it is kept for 3 or 4 hours, becomes stale and tasteless, so the existence of material enjoyment can endure as long as it is fresh, as long as life is fresh. But at the fag end of life, everything becomes tasteless, and everything appears to be vain and painful. The life of Emperor Swayambhuva Manu, however, was not tasteless. As he grew older, his life remained as fresh as in the beginning because of his continued Krishna consciousness. The life of a man in Krishna consciousness is always fresh. It is said that the sun rises in the morning and sets in the evening, and its business is to reduce the duration of everyone's life. But the sunshine and sunset cannot diminish the life of one who engages in Krishna consciousness. Now, they do die. We die. The body perishes. But it's not... That's here. Swayambhuva Manu's life did not become stale after some time, for he engaged himself always in chanting about it, meditating upon Lord Vishnu. He was the greatest yogi because he never wasted his time. It is especially mentioned here, Vishnu Kurvanto Bhuvatakata. When he talked only of Krishna and Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. When he heard something, it was about Krishna. When he meditated, it was upon Krishna and his activities. So, this is in addition to what we heard yesterday. This particular feature is, as life progresses, the tendency is the senses become weak, the mind becomes befuddled, and life isn't enjoyable, and there's pains in the body, and many people, when they get old, they just want to give up their body. It's just too much misery, and people are not nice to them, and all that grumpy stuff. But for a Krishna conscious devotee, it's not like that. But Prabhupada is 2:5:17, was that the verse?
2:5:17.
Yeah. Yes. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:3:17. The statement is being made. This is Sutta Goswami, because the previous verse is referring to Shukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva. So, Sutta Goswami says, by the rising and setting, both by rising and by setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes the time by discussing topics of the all-good personality of Godhead. So, obviously, the emphasis in Bhagavat Dharma is Bhagavat Katha, focusing consciousness upon the personality of Godhead. Is everything all right? You want people to move?
Yeah.
What would you like?
Move forward.
If you could move forward because it's crowded in the back, that's what you want?
Yeah.
Please move forward a little bit, everybody. Now you're happy. They may be happy or not happy, but you're happy. Okay. So, Bhagavat Dharma has very strong emphasis on the process of hearing and chanting. Why? They're the first two of the nine processes of bhakti. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. So, what did we hear from Brahma Samhita? Remembrance of me. So how do we get the remembrance of the personality of Godhead, Krishna? By hearing and chanting about him, which is exactly what Swami Bhupamanu did. And this verse is saying those who do that, with every passing of the rising and setting of the sun, they're that much closer. One day's worth. Closer to the personality of Godhead. So, yes, the body duration is being diminished, but their eternal life is being increased. We can't do anything about the diminishing the fact that birth and death are going to be there. But so how do you endure those features of inexorable flow of the material energy? You can't stop the flow of the material energy. That's not what a transcendentalist does. They fix their consciousness beyond, and so the passage of time is utilized in such a way, by hearing and chanting especially, to bring one to the position of transcendental consciousness, fixed upon the personality of Godhead, entering into eternal life, which is exactly what the verse, the five verses spoken by Krishna to Brahma were saying. Just the symmetry, I'm just appreciating it. It's so wonderful. Then the last part of the purport, short paragraph. It is stated that his life was very long, 71 yugas, 71 actually yuga cycles. One yuga is completed in 4,320,000 years. That's a yuga cycle. Seventy-one of such yuga cycles is the duration of the life of Manu, and 14 such Manus come and go in one day of Brahma. For the entire duration of his life, 4,320,000 times 71 years. Again, the math is something like 305 million something something plus years. That's our solar years. That's his lifetime. Madhu engaged in Krishna consciousness by chanting, hearing, talking about him, meditating upon Krishna. Therefore, his life is not wasted, nor did it become stale. Aging is just one of those things that's going to happen. If we manage to live and not die sooner, aging is going to be there. Again, the point that Prabhupada is making in the purport, that people don't look forward to getting old and lame and bodily aches and pains and, you know, things that used to work don't work anymore. Whatever it is, some machine part breaks or wears out and you can't do what you did before. You can't run around like a kid. Anyway, you can't do things that you used to do. And so now, what are you going to do? You're going to feel bored or unhappy or et cetera, et cetera. It's lonely, frustrated, because desires are still there, but the machine doesn't function the same way. So better to cultivate Krishna consciousness, just as Prahlad Maharaj says to his classmates, from the tender age of childhood, Kumara age, begin at that stage, and parents of children should understand that message of Bhagavatam and encourage, provide facility for, create an atmosphere that's conducive for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, even from the very beginning stages of life. And even the, you know, recreation and music and other things that people like to do and children like to do, see how they can be oriented towards, directed towards, focused upon Krishna. And at whatever stage that may happen in one's life, that's the message that we're receiving from Srimad Bhagavatam here in this nice chapter. And then as our life matures and progresses, whatever the duties are that change in the course of the maturing of one's body, life's duties change, circumstances change. One may become, you know, attached to the former circumstance. It just changes. And it's like Swami Bhumanu, his daughter's gone. So now it's another stage of life. But if that core of essential Krishna consciousness is there, sorry. Normally my phone doesn't ring. That grows and grows and grows. Krishna consciousness grows and grows, and as the body dwindles and deteriorates, your Krishna consciousness grows and grows. It's exactly what the verse is saying and Prabhupada is saying. It doesn't become stale and, you know, unhappy and all of that. Good advice. You want to be happy when you're the latter part of your life, if you live a longer life. Develop your Krishna consciousness now, at whatever stage. That the light goes on. Yes, I should develop my Krishna consciousness. Take it seriously and take up the activities that nurture that, along with the duties and, you know, the involvements with the energy that's surrounding us in all directions. Not in the mood of being the enjoyer of those energies, rather, because that's entangling and it covers the consciousness of the soul. The real happiness of the soul is not experienced. So those very same types of activities, dancing, music, social, family, etc., dedicated to gifts given from Krishna to utilize in fixing the mind upon Him and pleasing Him, and somehow that happiness is far greater. And internally, one's ultimate destination is being prepared, and specific to this verse, the later stages of life don't become painful, miserable, etc. That's the advocacy of the Bhagavatam. Any questions or comments?
Just a thought. I haven't phrased the idea, question properly, but this word like asinine, dotard, used in the material world for old people, especially men.
Senile.
And I have experienced that as people get old, my customers in businesses, I see them, you know, they don't have patience, they're angry, frustrated. But sometimes I also observe devotees have some of those qualities who are middle-aged.
So he has a comment. What's your question?
So, means how do we avoid that? Because, I mean, it's really...
Develop your Krishna consciousness. So if something like that is there, it's not... We should be careful not to judge. Don't... There's a biblical saying, judge not, lest ye be judged. So it's not a matter of judging, but it's a matter of something is an indication of something behind it. And so the purification of this particular Prabhu says further purification is needed, because otherwise that, what you just described, would be very different. They wouldn't, it's the residual effect. Such a thing is the residual effect of material contact, like the blades of the fan continuing. So the blades of the fan are continuing. We don't say, I'm going to judge that person. It's the blades, it's just the blades of the fan are continuing. And in relation to this individual, how can I be supportive of they are continuing nicely their process, their activities of hearing and chanting? Now there are some people, I'm thinking of a few in particular, it's very difficult to do that with those people, because, you know, the blades are not just slowly spinning, they're really spinning. And it has to do with, at least the ones I'm thinking of, they started late. There we go. Pious when they were younger, but not engaged directly in sadhana bhakti and devotional service and so forth. The piety helped them be pious or more towards the mode of goodness, but the other modes are also operative, and you know, the actual submission unto Krishna's happiness, my life is meant for Krishna's happiness, it's not fully illumined yet. And therefore, the residual. So, that's why. And then what to do? Encourage the hearing and chanting. Encourage the primary so that the residual effects will be diminished. And therefore, the person won't have to experience that same unhappiness. Feeling grumpy, and et cetera, et cetera. Angry. Blaming, all of those things that people do. Anything else? Yes?
What would be our seminar topic for next year?
It's going to be Sri Brahma Samhita texts 29 through 56. And I just this morning was thinking, I'm going to do it in China in October 1st. So I'm going to, between now and October 1st, because the Chinese national holiday is October 1 through 7. So I'm going to be in front of a Chinese audience making that presentation in, you know, with Chinese letters. Someone's going to do the translating and make it Chinese letters instead of English letters. So I've already done it once. That'll be a warm-up for the Thanksgiving presentation in English. That's my contemplation at the moment, anyway. That might change, but that's how I'm thinking. Something else? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I was thinking when we discussed Krishna's abode, and during that time we also discussed that person who are, or the devotees who are in Shweta Deep, they can go to Golok Vrindavan also. But then I was thinking that each and every rasa is self-satisfied.
Each and every?
Rasa is self-satisfied.
Yes.
Then why would a person would want to move from Shrimati to Golok Vrindavan?
Thank you for that nice question. And the answer is association. Let's take the example of Uddhava. Where was Uddhava's residence? Dwarka. Krishna sent Uddhava from Dwarka to Vrindavan. And what happened? He, by that association, developed such an appreciation and attraction for the mood of love of the resident of Vrindavan. He wanted to stay there and do austerity so he could take birth as a blade of grass in Vrindavan. Through association. So, the frame of your question was he unhappy in Dwarka? No. But experiencing that through association, by Krishna's arrangement, he got that association. He wanted that love. That it shifted. Here's another example. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, I mentioned this during the class, but I'll say it again. During his South India tour, Lord Chaitanya was invited for lunch at the home of a brahmana who was a devotee of Ram. He agreed, did his midday duties, went to the man's home for his lunch, and the man was just sitting there. You familiar with this pastime?
I think I've heard in a lecture, but I'm not remembering.
Lord Chaitanya inquired, "My dear sir, what is your intention? You invited me for lunch and I don't see any preparation being made for lunch." And the man's reply was, "I'm waiting for Lakshman to return from the forest with the ingredients for lunch." Lord Chaitanya could understand this was his meditation. He was deeply involved in his love and contemplation meditation upon Ram's Leela. But then he said, "But very soon Lakshman will return and then I'll prepare the lunch." So then lunch was prepared and Lord Chaitanya was taking lunch, and then he asked the Brahmin to have his meal after he finished. The Brahmin said, "I'm fasting. Sita has been kidnapped. And how can I eat a meal with this anxiety that Sita has been kidnapped by Ravan? I plan to fast until that." So Lord Chaitanya said, my dear Brahmin, please understand, it wasn't Sita that was kidnapped. It was a false Sita. Sita is fine. So, please take your meal. Break your fast." So, with the reassurance of Lord Chaitanya, he accepted his meal. And Lord Chaitanya went on his way. In the course of travels, not so far distant, he came across a particular Purana. Forget which one. Kurma Purana or something.
Kurma
Purana. Which explained it was Maya Sita. That Agni protected her and provided a false Sita. And so it was the false Sita that Ravana had kidnapped. And then the fire and the true Sita came out and things, all that. So he made a copy, or had a copy made by hand, and went back to the same place and told the Brahmana, "See, here's the scriptural verification. Sita wasn't kidnapped. It was a false Sita, Maya Sita." Previously, all the while, during the first visit, the man was constantly chanting Ram's name. Constantly chanting Ram's name. Like Hanuman, constantly chanting Ram's name. But when he came back, he was constantly chanting Krishna's name. Constantly chanting Krishna's name. So Lord Chaitanya inquired, "What happened? You were chanting Ram's name, now you're chanting Krishna's name." And he said, "It's because of your association." I have now understood that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Although you didn't teach it to me, I can understand just by your association. And so now my tongue can't chant anything but Krishna's name. It's not that before he was unsatisfied, but through association. So association is so important. And receiving, not just having the opportunity, but receiving that association with an open heart. So important. So important. And then anything can happen. Krishna's magic happens. Okay? Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Prabhupada. Keep